Today on Focal Point, from Pastor Mike Fabares.
Love says, no, I'm going to fight the you bug me tendency, and I'm going to try to love. And one thing that helps me love you now is we're moving toward a perfect place, perfect relationship. I'm perfect, you're perfect. And you know what? Anything that might at this point drive us apart will not matter then. Because I'm going to be like him, you're going to be like him. Man, none of it will matter.
Sometimes, when we're in the trenches of a disagreement, it can be hard to see things clearly. Our pulse starts to race, and our bodies enter that fight-or-flight mode. Suddenly, we're taking cheap shots and saying things we'll regret. Well, today on Focal Point, Pastor Mike Fabares offers a perspective that may help us keep our cool when arguments flare up. He's talking about being prompted by love as he continues our study through 1 Corinthians. This is an area we can all improve in, so let's dive in.
How are you? Have you noticed that question's getting harder and harder to answer? Grammatically speaking, I mean. All your friends starting to say, they don't say good anymore, they say well, and then you're thinking, well, it's good and wrong, maybe it's well. Well sounds, well, well doesn't sound good. What? You know, you start wondering, is it well or is it good? Or is that just me that worries about that? All right. Well, I'm going to dispel the myth here, or the confusion. Can I dispel the confusion for just a second, a little grammar lesson? Are you ready? Good is an adjective, okay? Well is an adverb. Adjective modify nouns, and adverbs modify. So an adjective is going to modify a person, place, or thing, okay? So if you come up to me and say, how are you? How am I? I'm a noun. See? Meet a noun. I'm a noun. So if you say, how are you? I'm going to say, I'm good, because good is an adjective. Or if I'm not good, I'm going to say, I'm bad, or I'm sad, or I'm happy, or I'm glad, or I'm mad, or I'm rich, or poor, whatever. I should throw an adjective at you. So why do people say well? They say well because sometimes you don't say, how are you? You say, how are you doing? Oh, now that changes everything. How are you doing? That's different. How are you doing? Doing, now you're asking me about some activity here in my life. You're wanting me to now describe an action to describe, you know, this verb, which is really a participle, but you're trying to ask me to describe that. So now it's time to say, well, I'm not doing good, I'm doing well. I'm doing well, see? Or maybe I'm not doing well. Maybe I'm doing, you know, use another adverb. Adverbs usually have an L-Y at the end, you know. I'm doing horribly. Maybe I'm doing well, but I don't want to say well. I want to use an L-Y. I'm doing smashingly. Smashingly. Or wonderfully. Or terribly. Or whatever. Just use that. Now, there's still a little confusion because some purists will say, I can still say well because sometimes well serves as an adjective. And if you're into that deep, you know, I'm sorry, but you're technically right, but well can only be used as an adjective if you're referring to your health. Okay? So, that's how it works. It's true. So if your doctor says, how are you? Then you can say, I'm well, because that's what he cares about. Or you can say, I'm not well, which means I'm sick or I'm not sick, right? That's why, by the way, the hypochondriac, when he wins the lottery, if you ask him how is he's going to say, I'm good, but I'm not well. You follow that? So, if I ask you, how are you? You say, good. How you doing? Well, what does that have to do with anything? There's a deep theological truth buried in here somewhere. I thought about that whole confusion, how you doing or, you know, how are you, when I was thinking through what we've been learning here in 1 Corinthians 13. In 1 Corinthians 13, we've been kind of seeing this dichotomy because those are two different questions. How are you and how are you doing? In 1 Corinthians chapter 13, we uncovered some pretty fundamental truths about us as Christians. And if you ask Paul about the Corinthians, how are they? The answer is great. Why? Because you're loved by the Father, because Christ has loved you to the supreme to go to the cross for you, because you're children of the King, because you're maximally loved and you're blessed in every way. Okay? How are you? Great, Paul would say. Now, if you ask Paul, how are the Corinthians doing? Not so well. Why? Because they're showing lots of signs of selfishness. They're having trouble forgiving each other. They're pushing their agendas in front of their brother's agendas. They are easily irritated. So Paul says, well, you know, there is the reality of, biblically, that you are great in terms of your status, your standing. You have every advantage. The problem is you're not doing very well. Paul's whole goal in 1 Corinthians is to close the gap. That's what he'd like to see happen. That ultimately, you are just, you've got it. As Peter put it, you have everything pertaining to life and godliness. Problem is, maybe you're not living that out all that well. Or, to put it in terms of 1 Corinthians chapter 13, let's think in those terms. When it comes to what we've been learning, how are you? The answer could be, I'm loved. Ultimately, that's been the focal point. I'm loved by God. And as 1 John clearly states, if I'm loved by God, then the question, how are you doing? How are you living? Here's a good adverb you can throw in. Lovingly. At least you should be. See, I want to live lovingly. I want to be expressing the love that I've received from God. Just as God loved me, if this is how I know love, that he loved me, so I ought also to love one another. And Paul says, that's really what it's all about. And as a matter of fact, when it comes to assessing your life, how are you and how are you doing, I suppose it would be helpful, and Paul would say it'd be really helpful, if you'd begin to assess your life by those basic truths. You know, how am I? I'm great because I'm loved. How are you doing? Well, that really depends on how well I'm loving. Am I being a loving person? Do I have, and that's not a sentimental definition of love if you've been with us, it's the biblical definition of love. And if that's happening, if that's my motive for my actions, then you're in good shape. But that's required a shift from what I do to why I do it. Do you remember that in 1 Corinthians 12? They're all hung up on what they do. Well, I got this guy, he does that, and that guy, he's important, he does that. And look at that gift. Wow, that one's exciting. That guy's spiritual. He says, let's stop being so focused on what we do. Let's start focusing on why we do it. And if we do that, and gauge it by this most important divine attribute, God's love, and that love is now being replicated in my relationships with others, now that's the way to define yourself. So we define ourselves, we assess ourselves, we say, you know, how are we doing based on how well we're loving. And if we define our lives by any other standard, if our self-assessment is based on anything else, Paul's instructions for us in the last section of 1 Corinthians 13 is this: you're short-sighted. If you use anything else to figure out how you're doing, you're short-sighted, because nothing else will ultimately matter. Look at how he puts it. Let's look at 1 Corinthians chapter 13, verse number 8. Here's how it's put. He says in verse 8, and you might remember or glance at verse 7, these great superlatives, it always, we're talking about love now, always protects, always trusts, always hopes, always perseveres. And then he says, you want to talk about the ultimate superlative? Here it is, verse 8, love never fails. And what he's talking about here is time. In terms of time, how do I know that? Because look where he goes next, verse 8. Where there are prophecies, now we're back to the problem. The problem was they viewed themselves based on what they do in the church. Oh, there's the prophet, Mr. Prophet. Wow, you're the guy who speaks for God. You're the guy up in front who's telling us what God thinks. Wow, Mr. Prophet, aren't you special? And they thought that they were. And he says, here, just realize this. Love never fails, but let's talk about the role that you play there as Mr. Prophet. The prophecies, you know what? They'll cease. They'll cease. And tongues, this thing we really haven't unpacked because we'll get to it in, you know, full throttle in chapter 14. But this, let's suffice it to say, this esoteric and kind of ostentatious display of spirituality in this demonstration in Corinth called tongues, that thing, how they were doing it there, he says, you know what, tongues, what you Mr. Tongue Speakers, just know this, one day tongues will be stilled. And he says, what about knowledge? Now, whatever that is, that must be something that they're kind of polishing their nameplate with, because whatever that gift was, it was something they saw as very important. Here's the guy you go to, or here's the gal, really got the knowledge. They're connected with God, whether that was clearly supernatural or whatever. It was the important person. You want to know God's will for your life. You want to know what it is. You want the answers. Go to Mr. Knowledge over here. That's that. That gift of knowledge, he says, you got to realize it's going to pass away. Now, it started with this: love never fails. But all these roles that we play, they're all fleeting. Let's just start with that in verse number 8 and jot this down on your worksheet. Okay? Here's the first observation in the passage. When it comes to love versus who I am and what role I play in this world and in our church, I need to, number one, keep myself in perspective. Keep yourself in perspective. Just recognize this. It is such a far distant second to the real issue, and that is, Mike, how you doing? Well, let's talk about how well I'm loving people this week. Is that my motive for what I do? And that sounds familiar because we've dealt with that from the beginning of this chapter. And that is, no matter if you're in the worship team singing or in the back room changing diapers or whether you're serving on the mission field or leading a Bible study, whatever your role is that you find significance in and you think, well, this is the real question is, why are you doing it? That is important because the reality of your role will eventually change. The role is mutable. The role changes. The goal, it doesn't change. How I love people changes. That I love people should never change. That's the immutable goal, that I try to love people through the things that I do. You love people because I've loved you. One more passage before we leave this point. 1 Corinthians chapter 4. Let's look at the fourth chapter of 1 Corinthians. Again, we see the word, which we're so used to seeing in the Bible. It doesn't jar us. But this is really like just a real radically, just it revises our perspective on ourselves. When Paul, by the way, speaking in the first person in 1 Corinthians 4, is talking about himself in these terms, when they're all arguing about, is Apollos a better preacher than Cephas, or is Cephas better than Paul? And I really like Paul because, you know, he's an apostle, and Apollos, he's not an apostle, he's just a great speaker, though. And so they're all figuring out who's the greatest. And he says, listen, here's how you ought to view us. Verse 1, so then, men ought to regard us as, here's the word, servants. We're just servants. God may ask us to go up in front of people and speak. He may ask us to go in the back and change diapers. He may have us go over here, put a guitar around our neck and lead in worship. He may make us go on the mission field and do it. Whatever. We're just servants. I mean, we've been entrusted with the secret things of God, if you're talking about Cephas and Paul. But you know what? The bottom line is we're just required, verse 2, if we've been given a trust, just to prove faithful, just to discharge our responsibilities with fidelity. That's all we're supposed to do. He says, I care very little if I'm judged by you or any other human court and you think my preaching's better than Apollos's or Peter's. Whatever, that doesn't matter to me. I don't even judge myself. I'm not comparing my stuff to his stuff. It doesn't matter. My conscience is clear. I'm being faithful in my task, Paul says. But that doesn't make me innocent. Ultimately, it comes down to the Lord, and the Lord judges me. Therefore, all of us should stand back and say, we're not going to judge anything before the time. Verse 5, let's wait until the Lord comes when he will bring to light what is hidden in darkness, and he will expose whether or not my preaching was really any better than Apollos' preaching. Underline that part of it. Is that what it says there? Going to start comparing ministries? Comparing effectiveness? No. He is going to expose the, what is it? Motives of men's hearts. And then it says, at that time, each will receive his praise from God. Now, whether you're out there doing something that's very nondescript and doesn't make a big splash in the world, doesn't make a big splash in the eyes of people in the church, if you did it faithfully because you were called to do it and your focus was not on the role, it was on the motive, and the motive is to love people, then he says, you know what, that's a good thing. And one day God will then bring praise to the people that have done it with the right motive. Verse 6, brothers, I've applied these things, he says, to myself and to Apollos for your benefit, so that you may learn from us the meaning of the saying, this old rabbinic phrase, don't go beyond what's written. Paul expands on that in Romans 12 and 13, the idea of don't think more highly of yourself than you ought. Just lean back, settle down. Then you won't take pride in one man over against another. For who makes you different from anyone else anyway? And what do you have that you didn't receive? And if you've received it, why do you boast as if you did not? I mean, that's been an assignment that you've had. And your assignment, maybe in the world, is to run this big business or to be really successful in that or to do this or to do that. And you've just, you're starting to do what we all do. And that is we start to define ourselves based on what we do or what we've accomplished. And God says, stop. Get yourself in perspective. Weigh what you do against really the most important thing. And that is, why do you do it? Do you do it because you love? That's the important thing. Roles change. Roles change. I always think of that when I think about the fact that I pastor a church that my parents attend. Can you imagine preaching to your parents every week? Let's do that. That's comfortable, right? No, that's kind of weird. And you know what really freaks me out about that? Is that sometimes I go home and look at my two boys and I think one day one of them might be my pastor. That really freaks me out. I mean, think about it. That changes kind of your feeling about everything. All right, going and discipline one this afternoon, I'm going to think, you know, one day he may kick me out of his church. I don't know.
We may have role reversal. I don't understand it. Roles change.
But the bottom line requirement doesn't, because what's a son supposed to do to his father? Love him. What's a father supposed to do to his son? Love him. That's the primary responsibility that we have. The role is secondary. Does that mean I abrogate my responsibility and I don't do it faithfully? No. I'm going to be a good parent. I'm going to try. That's going to be my endeavor. Doesn't mean I just flake out on my responsibility, but it does mean when I'm dealing with my child, that's the ultimate authority, right? Child, parent. What I need to do is recognize I'm dealing with my brother. That's a thought with your five-year-old, right? I'm dealing with my brother. I'm dealing with someone that really is no different than I am, just happens to be that I'm in a role of authority over him. Doesn't matter, though. The real important thing is, wow, I want to love my son right. And I want my son to think, I've got to love my dad right. The roles that we play may be different. One day, who knows? He could be my pastor. So be careful. Just recognize this. Brother's a better way to look at this. That's why Jesus, by the way, in Matthew chapter 23, do you remember that really stinging list of condemnation against the Pharisees and scribes and the rabbis of the day? When it's all said and done, here's what he says. So don't go around saying, rabbi, teacher, you know, father. Don't use those phrases. It's not that I'm concerned about the words themselves. I'm concerned about the kinds of distinctions that you people make that defines your worth, your value. You assess yourself based on your role. That's wrong. He says, you are all, here's the word he uses, brothers. That's the way you ought to view this. And that means my responsibility toward my brother is to love my brother. That's the goal. And therefore, I don't ever try to fall into, at least we shouldn't as Christians, fall into saying, well, this is my role and that's your role, and that's the way we kind of relate. Well, we need to relate in that way in some instances. I'm still my son's dad, but I still recognize ultimately the real judge of my life is how well that I love my son in the role as his father, but recognizing very carefully that the roles change. One day I won't be my son's father, really, right? And that's not just a Hallmark card. Well, no, that's not true. You'll always be. Not really, no. As a matter of fact, when you get into the next verse of 1 Corinthians chapter 13, why don't we look at that? One day, we're going to be in a whole different economy, and I'm not going to be dad anymore. It'll be different. Oh, it'll change even in this life. I mean, the roles are mutable and fleeting now, but talk about change. Wait till we get into the presence of God. Then you're not going to be going, Pastor Mike. That's not going to happen. Why? Because we're not going to have that role. The person that has all this great knowledge and insight, you're not going to be going to that person for insight anymore. Why? Because we're going to have been just completed. We've arrived. Take a look at how it's put, verse 9. Right now, all of our knowledge, all of our knowing, all the insight we have, it's all in part. All the prophesying, wow, Apollos, Cephas, Paul, they're so great, they know everything. No, they don't. They prophesy in part. God hadn't given it. We haven't arrived. But when perfection comes, the imperfect disappears. And right now, everything that we do, every quest to do this, that, and fun, it's all imperfect. And he uses an illustration, verse 11. When I was a child, I talked like a child. I thought like a child. I reasoned like a child. But when I became a man, I put childish ways behind me. What are you talking about? Verse 12. Well, here's another example. It's like looking at a reflection in a mirror, but it's a poor reflection, which, by the way, Corinth was one of the number one manufacturers of ancient mirrors, mirrors in the ancient Near East, and they would, or in Asia Minor, they would just by hand polish these pieces of metal and sometimes put them on handles, and they would make mirrors. But mirrors in the first century, they were terrible, right? You looked and it was cloudy. You couldn't quite see. It wasn't always flat. He says, that's what it's like. It's like looking in your mirrors, and the mirrors aren't perfect. You'd much rather see face to face. By the way, that's a key phrase in Scripture. One day we will see him face to face. Right now we know in part, bottom of verse 12, then we'll know fully, even as I'm fully known. How well does God know you right now? Inside and out. How well do you know God? Not very well. How well does your mentor know God? Well, really not very well. How well does your pastor know God? Well, really not very well. See what I'm saying? But one day, we'll all know God. How well? Perfectly. Now think about that. Now he's saying, listen, here's another motivating factor. You may not see the connection right away. We'll build the bridge. Are you ready? Number two on your outline. He's taking our attention and he's having us focus on eternity, focusing on the ultimate eschaton, the wrapping up of all things. Number two, put it this way. Let's keep our focus on eternity. How does that work? Well, let's think about what we just read. One day we'll see him face to face. In the margin of 1 Corinthians 12, why don't you jot this reference? 1 John chapter 3. 1 John chapter 3. There's a helpful phrase in here that helps me see the full implications of what it means to see God face to face. And it'll be helpful for us, I think. Verse 1, it's no surprise that we begin with this great understanding of the love of God in our lives. Look at verse 1. How great is the love the Father has lavished on us. How are you? I'm great. I'm loved. There's the good answer, right? I'm loved. How loved am I? I'm so loved that God calls me his own kid. I'm a child of God. And that is what we are, he says. The reason the world doesn't know us, and we're not getting any accolades for that, is because they didn't know him. But, dear friends, verse 2, now we are the children of God, and what we will be has not yet been made known. The full implications of being a child of God, we don't really know it quite yet. But, middle of verse 2, we know that when he appears, here's the phrase I'd like you to circle, we shall be like him. Why? Because we're going to see him face to face. We're going to see him as he is. And everyone who has this hope in him purifies himself just as he is pure. Now we're starting to see the connection. Why would Paul, at the end of chapter 13, when he's trying to get us to love one another, why would he focus us on the end of all things? Why would he focus us on eternity? Because here's the bottom line. One day you and I will be in a perfect place, face to face with a perfect God. You will be perfect because you'll see him as he is. And I will be perfect because I'm going to see him as he is. And we're going to be in a perfect place, perfect people, worshiping a perfect God, serving a perfect God for all eternity. Do you think we'll have any problems with each other then? I don't think so. We have problems now? Potentially. Why? Because you're not perfect and I'm not perfect. And my default mode is, you bug me. So what I'm saying is, love says, no, I'm going to fight the you bug me tendency, and I'm going to try to love. And one thing that helps me love you now is we're moving toward a perfect place, perfect relationship. I'm perfect, you're perfect. And you know what? Anything that might at this point drive us apart will not matter then. Because I'm going to be like him, you're going to be like him. Man, none of it will matter. Why would you be tempted to gossip about someone this week? You know what? It won't matter. It won't matter 100 years from now. Why would you be tempted to hold a grudge against someone and not forgive them? It's not going to be relevant 100 years from now. Why is it that you would have a feud that would last with someone where you'd keep a chip on your shoulder about it? None of that will matter a million years from now. All the little things we fight about will not matter. And Paul's saying, can you keep a focus on eternity?
A great perspective as we navigate difficult relationships. Keeping our focus on eternity makes little annoyances so much easier to bear. You're listening to Focal Point with Pastor Mike Fabares. Today's message is from our series called Prompted by Love, a study in 1 Corinthians 13. And if you want to learn more about showing the love of Christ to your fellow believers and non-Christians too, we have a book on that subject that we highly recommend. It's by our respected biblical counselor, Ed Welch, and it's titled Side by Side, Walking with Others in Wisdom and Love. This is a short book written for pastors, professional counselors, and lay people alike. It'll equip you to share the burdens of others through gentle words of wisdom and loving acts of kindness. If the church is the bride of Christ and we are the hands and feet of Christ, let's learn to love each other well. We'll send you a copy of this practical guide today as our way of saying thanks for your support of Focal Point. From daily messages to transcripts, study notes, and downloadable resources, our mission is to help more people explore the depths of Scripture. And that mission is funded by listeners like you. You know, summer tends to be a slower season for giving. So would you consider giving generously this month to shore up this ministry and keep us going strong? Here's the number to call, 888-320-5885. In case you missed it, that's 888-320-5885. Or go to focalpointradio.org and be sure to request the resource I mentioned, Side by Side, Walking with Others in Wisdom and Love. One last note before we close. If you're planning any travel this summer, don't forget that you can take Focal Point with you by downloading the free Focal Point mobile app. It makes it easy to listen wherever you go. Just search for Focal Point in your app store. Well, I'm your host, Dave Drewy, inviting you to join us next time for our weekly feature called Ask Pastor Mike. We'll be tackling a question about the names of God right here Friday on Focal Point.
Pastor Mike here. You know, it's an honor to be with you every day, helping you explore the depths of Scripture. But I want to be clear, no amount of Bible knowledge is ever going to save you. Be sure where you stand with God. Get in touch with us. We'd love to pray with you and for you. Visit us today at focalpointradio.org. We look forward to hearing from you.
Today's program was produced and sponsored by Focal Point Ministries.